Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing this week, sir?
Good, Jimmy. Hope you're doing well. Hope all your fans out there are doing well.
We are doing well. Got out to the golf course this week on Wednesday. It was an absolutely gorgeous day. So, Andy, that makes it a good week.
Yeah, I played Wednesday, too. I might play more. I'm going to play more. I can't help it.
Nothing wrong with that, my friend. It's one of the highlights of my week. Every week I can get out there. All right. Let's get to some college football news, Andy. The big news this week is that college football, they are changing eligibility rules. They are changing from the you had 5 years to play four seasons with a red shirt, but you could play four games and it wouldn't count against you. You could get a medical red shirt that you could appeal if you wanted an extra year. You could end up being 32 years old and still being able to have college eligibility.
Yeah, forget about the litany of exemptions you could apply for, like exemption this, exemption that, this exemption based on this. So, yeah, it was a very arduous. It was an old model that had purpose, but its shelf life had run out.
It absolutely needed to be replaced. And The new rule is you get to play for five seasons and you have 5 years to do that. And that's the rule. And they also added, and I don't think this gets emphasized enough, Andy, there's an age element to it also. Your clock starts. If you come out of high school and start playing, those are your 5 years. Otherwise, it's when from the year you turn 19. In other words, you and I are no longer eligible.
Right. Basically, this is a contract limit, right? Like in the age of NIL and, you know, pay for play, this is a contract limit. It's, you know, you have 5 years, you're guaranteed to be able to work and get paid per se for 5 years. I like the age limit probably the most of all of this. In other words, they're doing what they can to get the clock started as soon as possible. In other words, they don't want 23 and 24 and 25 year olds to be, you know, making up. I don't think it's a problem football. I think the age limit came about and was more obvious in basketball, less guys on the floor, men's basketball, some in women's basketball, but the age limit, I like the fact that they put some parameters in place to start the clock as soon as possible. In other words, we're not trying to run the clock out on you, but we're also not going to let you hang around and take somebody else's opportunities away because you want to hang around longer and have a guaranteed income. So I think the clock starting is the hidden key to all of this. I think you're 100% right.
And the other part to it, and I think you may be right, you know, men's basketball is just gone crazy, and we'll hit on that in a second, but where it does affect football, Andy, is this, I played junior college, so those years shouldn't count.
Right.
It's a way to eliminate all of that extraneous stuff by using the age limit. It's kind of the catch-all to eliminate all of these bogus where you have players in their eighth year on campus, you know, which automatically makes them 26 years old.
Right. And the exemptions were limited. They took, you know, I think you're right. Like the Division II or FCS to FBS, could you get an exemption? Well, Division II, junior college, 5 years. 5 years, collegiate athletics. They sort of painted it with a broad brush because it needed painted with a broad brush because of the amount of eligibility challenges and exemptions that have come about over the past 3 years. Legally, there was court battles. There were, exemptions being made to the NCAA that were like, not legal challenges, but had, if A isn't B and B is C, but C is D, he's eligible because of F, right? So they were facing a lot of that. So they needed to eliminate that and put it in a window. And let's face it, there's a big difference between an 18 and a 19-year-old and a 24, 25-year-old college athlete. I think that has created some unfair advantages. I'm not a fan of the prescribing to, well, you're limiting somebody's ability to make an income. No, you're not. You're giving them a window of opportunity for that income, and it opens and it closes, and that's it. And I don't think they had a full handle in this new era that college football has undergone since COVID. Maybe it started a little before COVID. I don't think they had a handle on the ending, right? It was so open-ended that it became, there were 9 or 10 different ways to walk through a back door. So I think they had to close the back end, and they closed the back end and started the clock on the front end in a fair, equitable way. I think they did it right. I like it. I think it's been coming, and I'm glad it's going to take place sooner than later.
And Andy, they, like so many things, start with good intentions and end up in a place you don't want them to be, the unintended consequences. I think when they started doing the redshirt option, okay, that's great. So I've got 5 years to play four. So I sit out typically my freshman year, my first year. Then someone gets on the field for one game, breaks their leg, but that counts as a year of eligibility because they were on the field for three plays. Right. So someone said, that's not really fair. So let's create this medical redshirt. Well, the medical redshirt, so it starts when you're in there for one game, for two plays. Then it all of a sudden, well, where's the line? Three plays? Four plays? One game?
Six games?
Two games? All right. So then even when they start trying to do this, well, you get to play four games and maintain your redshirt. Well, four games. Well, what about playoffs then? Should they count?
Right.
Then it's like, well, let's give them nine games and not count it. Nine games and the playoffs. So theoretically, you could play 13 games and it wouldn't count. So it starts with them trying to do something fair and nice and good. What I like, though, about this ruling is they are not just totally restricting players. They're actually giving something also. A free fifth year. Like, hey, players, we're now, for 90-some percent of the players, this will allow them more time, more playing by giving them a fifth year as opposed to four.
Yeah, and it as the playing field level, right, leveled for the in terms of the players and the money and everything, the tentacles became untenable because of this, right? I think the medical redshirt was a very fair intentioned piece of it. Like, you always felt bad for a guy that, played a game and a half and lost the season, right? But then the guy that played 10 and a half games was also applying for the medical redshirt, right? There were unintended consequences, as you put it. I like the fact that this eliminates the medical redshirt, right? Hey, bad luck's going to happen in life. Get used to it. You have a five-year window. This is your time frame. this is the length of the contract per se. It's not a contract, but you know what I'm saying. Like, these are the terms and limits. This is the start. This is the end. These are the terms and limits. This is your opportunity window. It doesn't go beyond that. It has a, it's more finite and more clearly defined. And, you know, let's face it, it helps 95% of college athletes in most sports. What percentage of collegiate athletes go to a professional slash next level slash full-time pro? And, you know, football, what, 5%? Right, Jimmy? So this is for the 90%. Yeah, probably. This is for the 95%, not for the 5%. I don't know that everyone's going to see it that way, but this is for the bigger, greater good. Look, you lose a year to an injury. It takes you 3 years to develop, right? Okay, you had 1 year if you took 3 years to develop and didn't take a red shirt. Now you got 2 years, right? The opportunity financially and the opportunity as an athlete are equal. And that's what I like more than anything, that it is a more fair and equitable level playing field, and it puts everybody in the same window.
You made a real good point about the vast majority of players. This will be to their advantage. Yeah. It gives them a fifth full year of eligibility, which prior they did not have. Now, what has changed in this last half decade or so is player compensation. So all of a sudden, you know, it's not just, oh, I want that extra year to play. It's, I want that extra year of income. And that has changed the,
yeah,
right. It's changed the desirability to come back and play.
Sure.
And that's created the other problem. So that's where that age limit, and I don't know if they'll hit into any issue for the age limit, if that would be challenged legally. But, you know, it's the same. Age limits are part of sports. I mean, you play Little League Baseball, you're done at 12.
Right.
The better analogy is probably high school athletics, Andy. There's a set date where if you turn, you know, you can't turn 18 prior to this date and still play. So there's age limits. It's a well-established criteria for players in you know, competition. So I understand that in college that's a little different than high school, but it is still an age limit. Of course, Andy, and all this, the devil's in the details. We're going to talk about those when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Andy. I'm Jim. We're talking about the new college football rule, or college sports rule. 5 years to play five season. Andy, I think you and I are in agreement. It's a tremendous rule. I think it's fantastic. It's good in a lot of different ways. But of course, in all of these things, the devil's in the details. So let's hit a couple of those details. First of all, I talked about it's 5 years to play five seasons. Here are the exceptions to the rule. A religious mission, think BYU. Military service, which I'm not sure I've heard of a lot of examples of that, but it's understandable. I think that one's logical. And the third one is, we often forget about the female athletes, a pregnancy extends the clock. Again, haven't heard a lot of those instances, but there's been a couple of them. So those are the exceptions. We are definitely going to get legal challenges to it, Andy. And yes, the first, I'm already reading, you know, and this is a lawyer who's already establishing this, trying to get as many clients as possible into the fold, where players who finished up their eligibility this past season.
You 2025 was their last year of eligibility. 24-25 was the end of their eligibility.
25-26.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, 25 into 26 when the line was drawn to end 26 eligibility.
Right. Yes. Right. So if you played 4 years, used up your 4 years of eligibility, this is the line. That's where he's starting for his that group who had played 4 years. They want them to extend that fifth year to them.
Yeah, they're looking for a grandfather clause. Essentially, they're looking for a one-year grandfather clause. Like the one stuck in this cycle, they're looking for a grandfather clause. I'm not a lawyer, don't know the legal ramifications of it. It doesn't feel like you need to be grandfathered in because you didn't start your college career with this. You started your college career with these terms of your eligibility, and your eligibility flies out. It's not so much a grandfather clause as they're looking for a freebie. That's what exactly. They're looking for a handout, a freebie handout.
You knew the rules when you came in, and those were the rules. And you're right. It's really just, hey, I want the freebie. The line has to be drawn somewhere. And one of the things I saw in the response from the NCAA on why they did it that way is they said, you know what? Every team has been going under the impression that these players who played 4 years were moving on, were no longer eligible. So everybody was basing their planning and building of their team on the fact that that was the case. All of a sudden, if you change the rule and allow them in, for some teams, they'll say, hey, this is great. I get my quarterback back for another year. But you know what? You had another quarterback who transferred to that school under the impression that other guy was done with his eligibility.
Yeah, so, I think they drew the right line. It's still going to be challenged legally. They're still going to have to defend the drawing of their line. But, and I, again, don't know the legality of it, but, you know, I don't think they have a case to be made because they're looking for something that didn't exist when they started. In other words, 6 months ago, they did not have a path to, there wasn't a legal path to another year of eligibility. Because there is one, that means you're going to go after one. That's a handout.
Exactly, Andy. So I also think this is a situation where this isn't a controversial rule. My sense is most everybody is supportive of it. And you may not, court of public opinion doesn't matter. Yes, it does. It very much matters. Talk to Brendan Sorsby about that. Yes, it does matter. So, okay, Andy, now my question to you is, does this create any changes in how you run your team, how you recruit your team?
I don't think it changes in how you recruit your team because it's still a volatile, especially, football. In football, let's talk about football because we always talk about football and football first. It's still volatile, right? You're still looking at, multiple transfer portals opportunities. You're still looking at high turnover, right? The inside, the framework of this good rule is still volatile, Jimmy. It's still very transactional in nature. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I don't think that this changes any of that transactional nature inside the window. It just puts a framework around it, inside it, it's still very, very, very volatile and transactional. So I think you still have to kind of work in the same way. I still think roster retention is going to be important, right? Let's face it, guys that come out that are going to be NFL prospects or looking to be NFL prospects or have that opportunity, they're three-year guys, right? They're three-year. They're not looking at the five-year. They're looking at the three-year. Can you get a fourth year out of them? You know what I mean? Roster retention, turning a three into a four-year, that's still going to matter inside the window. Or a guy who was came on in his third, became an NFL prospect in his fourth. Can you get a fifth year out of them at the university level? So I don't think that changes. I don't think how you change and build your roster changes all that much. It just clearly defines the framework within where you are working. I think at the end of the first cycle of this, you'll know a little bit more about how you handle the later years of this when building your roster. Right now, it seems like guys whose eligibility is running out or close to running out, was kind of a tweener in the middle, they're mostly being let go at their own course and cause. And you know what I mean? You're moving on and going back to back ending with the transfer portal, stuffing as many recruits as you can into your class. I don't know how it'll look, but I think the late year eligibility guys, I'll be interested to see how it looks at the end and how that plays out. That might be the biggest difference I can see right now is in the end.
Well, it also, you know, I was trying to think about this, how it'll change how we reference players. I haven't thought about this. They're no longer freshmen, sophomore, juniors. You got to start doing first year, second year, fifth year guy. But I wondered how much this will change the guys who, you know what, you'll never play in the NFL. You could be a starter and that could be the case. Potentially even a depth piece on the team, where I think previously, you know what, 4 years, I'm done as a player. You know, I'm done getting beat up, you know, in practice over and over. All of a sudden, it's, well, I could get paid pretty well being a depth player.
Right.
And, you know, as a 21 or 22 year old, I may come back for another year. So players, and, you know, off the top of my head, for Penn State, I'm thinking of a guy like Dominic Rulli. He was on special teams. He was always a backup center on the offensive line.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, you know, and it's kind of the situation he was in this past year. He chose to come back. Is I'm wondering how many more of those kind of players we're going to get, that there's value to those guys coming around for a fifth year.
Yeah, that's why I said I think the ending is going to be the most interesting, right? Like, I think a player was making the choice. The school's going to have a say in as well, right? Scholarships are renewed.
Right.
How many of these fifth-year guys are we looking at on our roster? Whereas, you know, right now the fifth-year guys choose to come back or choose to do something different. I think you're 100% right. He's a good example, and it's about the ending. What, you know, how many fully grown men are you going to keep around that have developed into something, or are you going to be looking for newer, fresher talent and younger talent? That might be the hardest balance to strike for this is, you know, am I going to sprinkle a little something old, a lot of something new? Am I going to borrow from the transfer portal? You know what I mean? You know where I'm going. It's that balance you're striking that's going to be interesting. And I think this gives the players a lot more options at the end of their career.
Well, and I think also, Andy, and I'll use Penn State as an example, you know, they have zero experience behind Rocco Beck. Zero. All of a sudden, you know, they bring in a kid from a school you and I have never even heard of, okay? But he has experience. And if you're that kid who's already played 4 years at some small school, succeeded there, whatever, hey, I'm going to get paid to be a backup quarterback out of Penn State. And it's just, we want the kid not to challenge to be a starter. We want him for his experience. He's been on the field. We otherwise would have to trust a freshman or a first-year player. Let's get a kid who's been on the field quite a bit. And it gives that kid that extra opportunity.
The backup quarterback, I think, is a role that is going to expand, not because of this, but partly in conjunction with this. I think over the course of the first window of 5 years that we're going to see of this, I think you're going to see more. We've sort of seen the transfer portal of quarterbacks who want to be starters or want to go to a bigger school. I think the backup quarterback role is going to change and evolve and become something very different.
I think also where you'll see this be affected is in the specialty positions. A punter, a kicker, a holder, a long snapper, where, you know, there's those jobs, only a handful of those open up in the NFL every year, Andy. Hey, I could come back for a paycheck with that extra year on campus. It should become very attractive. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter number two of our show. When we come back, guess what? It's going to be your questions, and we're going to ask Andy.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. That means it's time for your questions and we ask Andy. If you want to send Andy a question, real easy. From the app, there's the Ask Andy button. If you go to the website, you'll see when you read anything or listen to our show, there's a place where you can send in a question or just email me at info@ksnsports.net. Let's get it started. Andy, these first couple, and I don't think these folks even know it, but it's going to be right up your alley.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to give you two of these kind of questions. Let's start with our friend Steve from Columbia, who says, Andy,
hi, Steve.
In caps, Andy and Jim.
Let's face it,
it's a dead time for college football, and Andy said he likes questions during this time of year. My wheelhouse. Let's discuss the biggest event in the world, FIFA World Cup. By the way, Steve, there's a war going on. I'm not sure the World Cup is bigger than that, but that's open to debate. Do either of you have any interest, even a bit? Most American football fans despise soccer. I am not one. The World Cup is the one event that rivals, if not surpasses, college football and fan craziness. I love it. Everyone's aware of the complaints on flopping and diving. Very annoying. But the ball is in play a heck of a lot more than football and baseball. Plus, the best player on the U.S. team, Christian, I hope I pronounced this right, Pulisic, is a local boy from Hershey. Wings, beer, and pizza on order for the match versus Land Down Under. USA, USA. Andy, what's your level of interest in the World Cup?
So, I have been to three World Cups. I played football, but I also ended up playing soccer and ended up playing a little professional soccer in Europe. During my military service, I was a member of the 1991 All-Army soccer team that played in the Armed Forces Tournament. I made that team. So I have some passion and purpose behind the sport that goes all the way back to when I went to high school in England. Hello, I'm living in England for almost 4 years. How am I not going to fall in love with soccer? However, I will tell you this, the World Cup, if you get a chance, and I know the ticket prices are ridiculous in America, any chance during a lifetime, the single greatest sporting spectacle for a game, any game, the two nations playing are irrelevant, is the World Cup. I have said that for the longest time. Having been a sports writer and covered a lot of stuff, it's still the single greatest sporting spectacle I've ever attended, including the Army-Navy game, which is awesome. A friend of mine last week when I was in State College, all I did was watch soccer and golf, the U.S. Open, all day, every day. That should tell you a little bit. He was going to a game in Philadelphia, and I said, Chris, it will be something you don't expect. You love soccer. Your son plays. You're all into it. I get it. This will just be different, and it'll be at a level that will surprise you and shock you, and it will blow you away. 10 minutes into the game, get a text from him. Boy, were you right. This is so next level. It's off the charts. It is the greatest sporting spectacle. Whether you're a fan of soccer or not, it's the greatest sporting spectacle you can attend. I'm all in on the FIFA World Cup. Yeah, okay, I do. Yes, do I kind of root for the United States? They're hard to root for. Yes, because I watch all their, you know, pretty much all their games, so I follow them all the time. But they're not going to win this World Cup. They're not even close, but they're having a good tournament so far, and that is very exciting to see.
All right, Andy, let's follow it up with Matt from Massachusetts, who says, Jim and Andy, I'd like to get your take on the World Cup. Have you been watching any of the games? It certainly created a lot of excitement, especially in Boston. Matt from Massachusetts, that makes sense. Thank the Scots for drinking all the beer. Yes. Soccer isn't a popular sport to watch here, but maybe this will be good for U.S. soccer afterwards. What do you think? Will this create the momentum to make an impact on the world stage for the United States? This one, Andy, I'm going to start with, okay, my take on that. Well, you already pointed out that you, when you played soccer in 1991, do I need to remind people who are math challenged? That's 35 years ago.
Okay. Correct.
Well, in 1994, the U.S. hosted the World Cup.
Correct.
And there were these same conversations, Matt, about, there's the enthusiasm. Could this turn the U.S. into a soccer power? Will this turn, us Americans into huge soccer fans? It created excitement. Youth soccer is very popular, but if you think it's going to take over the U.S., it's just not going to happen. It's the same way here. Now, I'm not a soccer guy, but I love the passion of the World Cup. I love what we're seeing from the fans from the different countries around the world, how into it they are. I do watch the U.S. games, and I root for them. But you know what? In a couple weeks after the U.S. is eliminated and the World Cup ends, my stake in soccer will be limited to watching Ted Lasso, Andy.
So the 94 World Cup produced the MLS, which I think is a good thing. It's major soccer in the United States, and that's about as good as it gets. It will never integrate into the culture as one of those sports. It's not going to happen. It's the same as like when the NFL goes to England or to Germany, right? The one game wonder creates buzz and is intriguing. And then you wait until the next one game comes to England or Germany or two games. You know what I mean? Like the in between, NFL's not going to integrate in Germany or England because soccer is king.
All right, let's move on. Let's get back to football. Let's get to Lou in Uniontown. He says, can Penn State keep up with the elite teams with what appears to be a much more limited budget for NIL?
Is their NIL budget limited?
I think, Andy, if, and these are guesstimates by me, by everybody, but as close as we could tell, Penn State's probably not quite top 10 in budget.
Yeah,
maybe
that's what I was going to say.
12th or 13th, somewhere around there. So, you know, you could name those teams that, you know, Texas, Texas Tech, Texas A&M, right. Ohio State, Georgia, Miami.
So I think if you're in the top 15, which is where they clearly are, yes, I think last year they spent last year, right? They overspent last year. They kind of pushed themselves to not broke, but you know what I mean? They spent.
They went to their limit.
They spent every dollar and dime they had. So, and that was for a reason. And it was the right reason. And they showed a next level capacity. But I think sometimes you have to be as smart as you are rich, right? Just being rich and spending money isn't going to win it for you. So I think they have the resources to be a competitive. It's can they find them? Can they recruit them? And can they get the right guys? That's always the $64,000 question, but they have the resources.
Well, I think we could bring this issue home with Henry from Morristown, who says, feels like we're losing a lot of high-end recruits. Is it we don't have the money or we refuse to spend on the high-end guys? Let me, you know, grab this one a bit, Andy, is I think there's college football teams are now learning what professional sports teams in like baseball and football have already learned. You know, how do you spend that money? How do you distribute it? Henry is right. We've seen in this recruiting class, you know, a five-star Cayman Spell running back goes to Georgia. An elite, you know, Jameer Dean, four-star wide receiver, committed, decommits, goes to Georgia. We're seeing those kind of things. High four-star quarterback Peter Bork, Virginia Tech, Penn State, he goes to Virginia Tech. The assumption is most of those decisions are about money, and that's going to be a huge factor in this. And I get the impression, in having talked to Derek Hoosier last week, you know, the Penn State GM, I get the sense they're trying to be smart with how they spend their money, you know. We budget X dollars. This is where we will go for that type of player. And if someone else is willing to go beyond that, we're not going to overspend for people. We're going to pay them what we think is the appropriate amount. The question becomes, Andy, is that just smart? Because you're not overpaying for a player, you can now use that elsewhere. Or does there reach a point where you have to overspend for a couple players if you want the very best players?
So I think it's a now and later scenario in my mind. Right now, I don't think they need to get into bidding wars for the players because they're in a transitional phase. Let's face it, this program is in a bit of a, you know, change. They don't have a product per se to sell. I've said that often. You've heard me beat that drum. Give them a year or two, and then you will find out whether or not they need to spend more and get into some of those bidding wars for players. It will largely depend on what the product looks like. In other words, right now, Penn State is not a destination. Right now, at this moment, they're still a blue blood school, but in this moment, are they a destination university program right now in this moment? No. Were they a destination program a year ago? Absolutely. That's how quick it changes. It can go the other way just as fast. 9-3, 10-2. That looks a little bit better as a first run for a program that was in transition. You see where I'm going? That right now, they're not a destination program, and players are looking for destinations. Elite players are looking for destinations.
And elite players, Andy, are looking for money.
Yes. Destination equals money.
They're, you know, Teams like Texas Tech was not a destination.
Money.
They're paying the money. All right. We got one more segment to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. Andy, you know me. I've got to have just the final word on that last question we got. And you were talking about at Penn State that you don't feel they're a destination place, that maybe this isn't the place where a five-star player wants to go. Yes, it is, if you're going to pay the money. I think the variable is this group thinks that – not they think. This is their belief. They do not use the star system. They use their own scouting system to decide. And Iowa State, if you look at their players, where they were recruited and how good they were when the opportunity came for them to be re-ranked in the transfer portal, they got a lot of value. A lot of players who were under-starred, they found those guys. The question becomes is that going to be good enough? Are they going to find enough not good players but elite players? Because they can scout better than the systems do, the services. We shall see that, Andy. All right, let's move on. Another topic. I know, one of your favorites, Brendan Sorsby.
Here we go. Fire it up.
Well, the story that never ends, Andy, it keeps on giving and giving. As most folks know, he was the quarterback at Cincinnati. Texas Tech paid. Perhaps overpaid, Andy, to bring him in. It's only money. They were willing to spend it. Turns out the kid has a gambling problem, has gambled on his own team. It's going to be suspended. Sorsby sues for the right to keep playing. He wins that. And what happens is Texas Tech and Sorsby are not prepared for the blowback. They think they're on the side of the Angels. And the rest of the world says, no, you're not. The kid should be punished. Well, this was going to be an ongoing thing. They talked about it being a mutual decision. My sense is this was mostly Texas Tech saying, we don't need this problem. It's, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. Time to move on. Sorsby declared for the supplemental NFL draft. He's going to go to the NFL. The NFL now says, not so fast, my friend. We're not going to have a supplemental draft just for you. Andy, what is your reaction to that?
So again, Texas Tech doesn't get a pass on this. Every corner, every turn, they couldn't have handled it any worse. They are still they're still the dog with the most fleas, right? With all of this. I think the NFL God forbid, let's face it, the NFL is about money and the NFL and the shield and making money. Let's not say they have a conscience, right? Let's not say, you know, they like to look like they're doing the greater good, but they only do the greater good to serve the shield. And I'm okay with that. Let's not say, but in this case, they kind of look like the adult in the room, right? They're like, okay, Texas Tech, you dropped the ball. Okay, Brendan Sorsby and your team. You drop the ball here, you guys, as hold my beer. We're going to act like the adults in the room. And the way they kind of gave the reasoning for this, it was more or less, you didn't meet our standards of accountability for us to go outside the box and do something we were not planning on doing. which is holding a supplemental draft. Yes, you got your application in on time, but it does not in any way, shape, or form rise to the level of us feeling that you deserve this outside-the-box opportunity at our expense. So we're a hard no. That's basically what they said, was we don't see the accountability that we're looking for and what you're dealing with. You didn't prove your case to us. You are not a member of the NFL. You only applied. So under our collective bargaining agreement, we still hold all the chips as to whether or not we conduct a supplemental draft. That is our decision solely and exclusively. And we say no. That's a rough one.
And I think, Andy, you shaped this as, you know, protecting the shield. And I think part of that, and I believe you're correct, but I think part of that is all sports, Andy, at least in this country, have said the biggest no-no in sports is gambling.
Right.
And especially gambling on your own sport, and even worse, gambling on your own team. You just can't do that. That's, you know, a mortal sin. You can't do that. That's been the history forever, well established. And I think if the NFL just allowed Brendan Sorsby into the league with no repercussions, you know, because the sin was occurred while he was in college on college sports. Now he gets a clean slate. I think the only question was how they were going to punish him. Were they going to allow him to be drafted and then suspend him for a time? I would think an entire season. How would they do that? And I think they found in this disallowing him to enter a supplemental draft was the easiest way for them to go about doing that.
It's their strongest legal leg to stand on, right? Of course, the shield, always going to protect the shield, always has the best advice and the best lawyers to understand this. When you look at this, there's many ways the NFL could have gone. When you read inside the details of this, what struck me was, this is the strongest legal leg they have to stand on. In other words, they could say no with confidence and say, yeah, you want to come after the shield, please come after it. But this is our grounds that we're going to stand on. And it seems to be sort of airtight legally. And despite what Sorsby's team might try and smoke and mirrors use with, this is pretty cut and dry, because simply put, he abandoned his NFL or his college eligibility. That puts you sort of in no man's land, right? Like, you can't go back and play college football. You've applied to the NFL, but you are not a member of the NFL under the collective bargaining agreement until a team selects you. Fight that one in the court of law, right? Like, he did A, took himself out of college football. That is clear and done and over. Puts himself in the middle, applies to go to the next level, and the next level says, you are not part of us yet, and our decision is this based on that. So A plus B equals C. This one looks pretty clear cut to me, Jimmy.
Well, I think it's also the NFL, at least in this situation, I think in most situations, they're pretty good at reading the tea leaves, okay? The public is so adamantly against what Brendan Sorsby did, you know, the betting on his own team. And, you know, I know folks have questioned me when I talk about the court of public opinion. When Sorsby was ruled eligible to play, or, you know, he got the injunction or whatever that was going to allow him to play, I made the statement, I still don't think he will play for Texas Tech this year because right. The blowback is so great. It didn't have to go back to court. None of that had to happen. It was just Texas Tech saying, oh my God, we had no idea. We thought we could paint this as the kid has an illness, this gambling addiction. We're looking out for his best, case scenario. And you know what? The public said, nah, no, no. Yeah. Who are you trying to kid there? This is not in his best interest. And there was that blowback. The NFL, I think, looked at it and said, really? We're not going to make that same mistake as Texas Tech did. We know which side the public is on. That's the side we're going to go on. It's not worth the blowback. And that's understanding their audience. And yes, it will, as you said, his lawyers, his legal team, they are going to try to do everything they can to, reject that answer and get in an appeal or whatever it would take. You know what? Ain't going to happen, Andy. He's out for the year.
The worst two words an addict can hear, or the worst two-letter word an addict can hear is no, right? Like, he wants, and his team want it his way and want what he wants. And he has a problem that is fairly clear now, hasn't been fully addressed, because football is a higher priority than the problem, right? That he's made clear, like, I want to play football. It'll help me. No, you have to help yourself. In other words, basically the NFL's like handing him a go help yourself ticket and check with us later. And nobody else would hand him one of those. Not his team, not Texas Tech, not himself. And they're telling him no. And that is the harshest reality an addict faces when you run your course, play your game, do all your little tricks, and the answer is still no. That forces you to face the elephant in the room.
Andy, you say, you know, no is the worst word for them to hear. It's probably the best word for them to hear as far as the end result. Now, just a little bit of clearing things up. His options are very limited. You know, what other leagues could they play? The Canadian Football League, I guess, has already begun. You know, there's the spring football season already done. He can't come back and play at a certain level in the NCAA. But there are a couple – there are so many different lower levels, I think it's junior college. There's where they are not under the same umbrella. And there was another kid who was actually suspended, I think maybe from Iowa. Now, he wasn't an NFL candidate, but he ended up going back to junior college. And that's probably the level he, you know, if he wants to get on the field this year, that might be his opportunity. All right, Andy, that is it. Hopefully that's the end of our series of Soresby.
Please.
All right, Andy, that's also it for the show. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first-of-its-kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.